Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shana Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
Shana, how did you think to call me Ginger Boy?
You are a Ginger Boy. You have this sort of, it's a skin tone, hair color state of being.
Yes, that
sort of reddish hair and pale white skin.
You,
and
you might have said, hey, red.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's just not as creative.
I agree, it's not. What in God's Name? We are asking the question, what in God's name is going on in the world? We're doing current events and culture from a theological and philosophical point of view, using really what's the wisdom of the ages to try to understand what's going on now.
Well, that's certainly what we're trying to do.
We aim
to bring the wisdom of the ages to bear on current events.
It's a high bar.
It is a high bar.
It's a high bar, and we need your help to do that.
We do. We welcome new listeners and old listeners alike to share the show out with a wider community. We're trying to grow our base at this time, and we can't do that without you. So thank you very much. Pick a favorite show if you haven't done so already, and share it with somebody you think might be interested.
Shana, I think of What in God's Name is offering, again, as best we can, with the high bar, offering good medicine rather than poisonous fruit into the public conversation. You know, I got that from a Buddhist meditation that I was doing recently with a group of Buddhists.
I like that. Say it again.
Yes, we are aiming to offer good medicine into the public conversation, not poisonous fruit.
Yeah, and there's certainly enough of that out there. We don't need to add to it.
Our core values: be curious,
go deep,
and shine the light. Today we want to be curious, go deep, and shine some light on a story that now is almost 2 weeks old. It's the story of Amber Geiger.
Our listeners may recall that Amber Geiger was a Texas police officer who arrived home after a very long shift and a difficult conversation with another officer she was romantically involved in, entered the wrong apartment, entered Botham Jean's apartment, where he was sitting, eating a bowl of ice cream, thought she had entered her apartment to find an intruder, and she shot him to death. And after shooting him, alerted 911, but did nothing to attempt to revive him or to stop the bleeding. That case was adjudicated. Recently, Amber Geiger was found guilty of murder and sentenced to 10 years in prison. But perhaps among the many startling moments in this story, the most startling for many of us was the moment when Botham Jean's brother, Brant, offered forgiveness during the victim statements. So we're going to get into that a little bit today, and there's a lot of elements to this story, a lot of different layers.
Shana texted me and said, do you want to do this story for our show? And I texted her back and said, I don't know what this story is. Amber Geiger, never heard of her.
And I texted Chris back and said, do you live under a rock?
And I said, yes.
Yes, I do.
And a true confession, and I said this to Shana, and I say it to our audience, and I imagine some of you feel the same way, but sometimes I bypass stories like this because they feel like a kick in the gut. It's too hard for me to really take in, to imagine this space of grief and injustice and loss, and it just seems it's sickening. It does kind of leave a pit in my stomach.
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. And my guess is, if you and I are heartbroken, probably our listeners are heartbroken too. So can we come together and speak some meaning into this that allows us to take something away, such that, you know, Botham Jean's death is not for naught.
But I'm thankful to Shana for prompting me to look at this story and for us to be able to talk about it today, because it raises a lot of really interesting questions.
And true confessions, Chris, I am someone who never used to turn away from a story. And I have found myself doing it more and more these days because it's just too heavy to hear. But hopefully today's show won't be too heavy to hear. We hope to bring some insight. We hope to, you know, go deep, shine some light, and maybe bring some meaning.
Yeah, because even though this story occurred in Dallas, Texas, the issues involved really do touch all of our lives, especially this concept of forgiveness. So, Shana, Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. So, Chris, as you started to get into it and started to reflect on it, what were sort of the more theological, philosophical themes that emerged for you?
What attracted me to moral and theological reflection on this story was Botham's brother, Brandt, offering forgiveness to Amber Geiger after she was convicted. And so that is a classical theological theme, this idea of forgiveness. The first thing I remind myself and like to remind other people is that forgiveness is not condoning. Forgiveness is not saying, oh, that was okay. So if you say to somebody, I forgive you, that doesn't mean that you're saying what you did was okay.
I've certainly heard folks wrestling with the forgiveness issue. One of the things that comes up is repentance. And does the person who did the harm need to be repentant? Ought they be repentant in order to receive the forgiveness? But that presumes that the forgiveness is offered for the person who misconducted, offered on behalf of the person who misconducted, as opposed to the one who forgives in order to not have their own heart hardened.
Yes.
The one who forgives in order to be able to effectively move on, to not be captured.
Exactly. So the idea is that forgiveness is offered for the benefit of the forgiver, not necessarily for the benefit of the forgivee. But I found this also interesting. Botham Jean's mother, Allison, and Brandt, the mm-hmm. brother who offered forgiveness, she, in the midst of supporting her son who offered this forgiveness, she was also calling for change in both Amber Geiger and in the Dallas Police Department. So that is it's a separate thing. To put it in theological language, she is asking Amber Geiger and the Dallas Police Department to repent.
And I think just as a point of illumination here, in case some of our listeners are, you know, your rock people, you know, initially the verdict came down guilty and there was a sigh of relief, I think, throughout the community that Officer Geiger was going to be held accountable for her actions. But when the sentencing came down, she was only sentenced to 10 years. And that raised a number of eyebrows. And I think we focus on the theological and philosophical. You know, there is also reality, which can never be avoided.
Wait a minute. Are you saying theology and philosophy are not reality?
No, I think they are. I think they are reality, but I think there are some elements to the story that transcend theological and philosophical. They're more sociological that need to be lifted up here, which is the fact that, you know, Botham John was a black man. Amber Geiger is a white woman. That she received a 10-year sentence is pretty minimum. Community wasn't happy against that. And I don't think we can look at this case, not at this particular time in America, I don't think we can look at this case apart from the backdrop of institutionalized racism that folks are working so hard right now to uncover. You know, the number of unarmed people of color who are losing their lives on the wrong end of a cop's firearm cannot be overstated.
Yes.
So this therefore becomes part of a bigger narrative.
Exactly. So this becomes, that's another facet of this that is so fascinating. So the element that you bring up goes beyond the individuals involved, the perpetrator of the crime, the forgiver, and it raises questions of corporate responsibility, corporate sin, racism, I mean, the systemic racism. And how do we address that? I mean, we just continually struggle to address that as a society.
And at the end of the day, Chris, I wonder, you know, ultimately, can we hold the complexity? Forgiveness was his to offer or not. He made it very clear afterwards that the reason he offered it was because he wants to be able to wake up happy every day. He wants to be able to move forward from this. I mean, obviously, he'll carry a hole in his heart for the rest of his life, where his brother used to dwell. What was interesting, and I'll confess this from my own position, is when I heard people of color making the point that the personal becomes the corporate, that, you know, in this day and age, whether he meant to or not, he was speaking for all people of color, and there is an expectation that people of color will offer forgiveness to white people who commit these heinous crimes, and never in the history of the world has it gone the other way around that I'm aware of.
I confess to you that when I heard, so you turned me on to the story, I started digging around in it, and then I heard a segment on National Public Radio that had sound from Brandt giving
at the trial
this moment where he says, I forgive you. And my confession is, I'm listening to this, and inside myself, I am saying, no, don't forgive her. And in that moment, as I reflect on it, I think I was at the level of the systematic racism. I was hearing his forgiveness as the collective African-American forgiveness that just gets offered, that is almost expected. And I, as a person who occurs as white.
Ginger boy.
There's a part of me that doesn't want to let us, those who occur as white, off the hook. And I hasten to add that I recognize that's unfair to Brandt. Because as you pointed out, Shana, it's his to offer. Forgiveness is his to offer. It's his to give because it's his life. Before his God, he is not representative of a type. Before his God, he is an individual.
In this particular narrative, he is the person who had his brother taken from him. And then that narrative lives against the backdrop of other narratives. I think her behavior that night defies logic in my mind, both in the shooting and in the not doing anything afterwards. They asked her, they said, well, you know, did you attempt CPR? Did you try to stop the bleeding? She said, no. They said, why not? She said, it didn't occur to me. So, you know, what all was going on with her in that moment that she was such a hot mess with a lethal weapon, in possession of a lethal weapon, that she walked into the wrong apartment, identified this man sitting on a couch eating vanilla ice cream as a threat, shot him even though he was unarmed, and then did nothing to respond to him. Now you want to talk about offering forgiveness, you know, for which of those things. So I have to confess, I'm with you. When Brandt got up and did that, I think my gut instinct was, I don't think I would be able to do that. Certainly not that quickly. I would hope to be able to do it in time, but that would involve a process. You know, in restorative justice circles, for example, restorative justice processes create opportunities for victims and perpetrators to come together and try to mend what was broken. I'm not sure a punitive trial would give me that, but if it did for him, then who am I to say? You know, I think that's at the end of the day, if it did for him, who am I to say? However, as somebody who does occur as Caucasian, it does concern me that there is this sort of expectation that white people will continue to perpetrate horrific crimes against unarmed people of color, and unarmed people of color will continue to forgive us. That sends a chill down my spine. I confess I just can't get away from that one. I'm not sure what you do with it, but it's the one I wrestle with.
So as we're talking, Shana, what I'm seeing is that one way to frame this story in the public conversation is that there are two dimensions to it. There's the individual Brandt offering forgiveness and the whole psycho-spiritual dynamic of an individual who is offering forgiveness. And then there's a second dimension, a public dimension, which includes race and the history of race in our country, and so therefore touches on questions of who we are as a people and where we're going. I'd like to circle back to the individual dynamic for a minute, because you said something earlier I wanted to touch on. I mentioned that forgiveness does not mean condoning, doesn't mean saying what happened was okay. I also, and this is the new point, I also understand forgiveness to be the willing forfeiture of the right of revenge. You offended me. A strict tit-for-tat kind of morality would say, I have a right to get back at you. I have a right to exact revenge. Forgiveness, then, is the willingness to give up that right for revenge, that willingness to give up tit for tat. And what you said that triggered my thinking in this way, what you said that's related to this, is when you were talking about Brandt making the decision to forgive because he doesn't want to carry a hardened heart. He doesn't want to carry bitterness into the future. We've all been harmed. We've all been injured in life by other people. And so it's a pertinent question for us. I think it's just true as a psycho-spiritual dynamic that if we harbor all of these grudges, it does harden our hearts.
So let's play with this a little bit. So if forgiveness is offered in order for our hearts not to get hard, but we're dealing with somebody who has not repented, has not taken responsibility for what they've done, then it really is beholden. It makes just good sense that we maintain some sort of a guard. I might forgive somebody, but I'm going to, I sure as heck aren't, am not going to invite them into my inner circle again where they can do more damage. They've been put out and they're out until they do the work to get back in. Does that harden the heart also? Or
I don't think so.
I mean, I think it just makes good sense. And I think sometimes when you start talking to people about forgiveness who are resisting the notion, and, you know, let's remember, I mean, Jesus doesn't qualify it. I mean, in the scripture, people said, well, what do you mean forgive them? How many times are we supposed to forgive them? 7? And Jesus said, no, how about 70 times 7? And, you know, had I been in the circle that day, my eyes would have fallen out of my head. You know, like, what? Are you kidding me? 70 times 7. Wow. Okay. Just forgive. There are times when I think we don't even have the power to forgive. I think I have felt at times that, you know, I was praying to be visited by the spirit of forgiveness. Like I used to pray for the tooth fairy when I was a little kid, like, please come and leave a quarter under my pillow tonight because I can't do this. You know, I don't have it in me. I am too angry, too injured, too upset. And yes, in that state, my heart is hard and I'm at effect of what was done to me. The only way to get real freedom from it is to disengage, is to, as you said, let go of my right to revenge and leave it to karma, to God, to...
And that doesn't mean we forget.
Or that we don't hold accountable.
Forgiveness does not mean forgetting. So if someone has hurt me in the past and I forgive them, that doesn't mean necessarily that I will let them back in my life.
Right, because forgiveness is not forgetting, and it's not an invitation. In fact, if I forgive and I forget, I do a great disservice to the one who has caused injury because I am, in effect, enabling them to injure again, to sin again. There's no question. When I saw that moment in the courtroom when Brandt asked if he could hug Amber Geiger, and I saw that clip, it was a very emotional moment.
So, Shana, to bring our show to a close today, let's circle back to the public dimension of this story. There's a very basic divide between those who see the systemic and continuing systemic racism and those who don't see it and are inclined to say, get over it. Slavery was over 100 years ago.
I didn't do it. Why should I have to put...
Yeah. And I have no answer to that except to just lift it up and say that is a very... It's
you know, we've got to get beyond the either or to the both and. I may disagree, and I do disagree ardently with those who refuse to acknowledge, and I would say it is a refusal to acknowledge systemic racism as opposed to, oh, I seriously just don't see it, you know. But that's my position and I'm sticking with it. That having been said, it is a perspective and we have to figure out a way to get beyond the divisiveness to something that's actually going to be constructive. Because as long as we just stay at the divisive point where, you know, yes, it is a horse, it's a mule, it's a horse, it's a mule, then, you know, then that's where we're going to stay.
I like that. It's a horse, it's a mule, it's a horse, it's a mule, because then the conversation moves when you
that's
can
from
say,
Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It was a horse. It was a mule. It was a horse. Yeah.
Well, thank you for explaining that, because I didn't get it. The conversation moves when you say, yeah, it's a horse. Look at this, this, and this. And the other person can hear, even if the other person doesn't necessarily agree or is able to see it. And the person who says it's a mule says to you, well, listen to that. Look at this. See this feature of this animal.
Was it Hearthshorn or Whitehead? I don't remember who talked about that is the moment of creative interchange when another person's reality becomes part of our internal landscape, which does not mean I agree with them. It means I understand how they're thinking about this.
Yeah.
And once I understand how they're thinking about it, we have the potential, and they understand how I'm thinking about it, we are at least still engaged. I wish I could remember if it was Hearthshorn or Whitehead, but whoever it was who talked about the process of creative interchange said it is in those moments when God becomes present.
So we need somebody on the show that we can talk to who does not see systemic racism so that we can have that conversation. How do we find that person?
Oh, we could start by walking out the door. I guess, I mean, we live in New Hampshire. It wouldn't be that hard.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine the light. You have been listening to What in God's Name? You can go to our website to find out more about our show, to find shows, to find Shana's and my biographies. It's whatingods.com.
You can also find us on Facebook or Instagram at What in Gods.
And you know what, Shana? We've got a couple of interesting shows coming up. We're doing an interview with Jeff McDonald next week. Jeff is a journalist, and we're going to talk to him about journalism.
The role of journalism, and talk about how word creates reality, yes.
So we're looking forward to that conversation with him and sharing it with you. Shana, great to see you.
Always good to see you, Chris.